This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
It's better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Swing and a drive, right field and deep. That goes Aquino. It's got a chance. Gone. Get out the tape measure. Long gone.
Fly the W.
Cubs fans, it's time to fly the W with Dustin Rhodes and Paul Crawley Jean.
You are listening to episode 91 of season 3 of the Fly the W670 podcast, the Cubs 24-25 off season wish list, and it's also Crawley's wish list. Let's hope there are let's hope they're aligned. Don't forget to listen, download, review, and most importantly, subscribe to the podcast, follow on all the socials. Follow Fly the W670 on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and email us flythew670@gmail.com. Well, it's a little bit of a quiet time right now. We're seeing that Juan Soto, Crawley, is setting up meetings. Unfortunately, I don't see any meetings set up with the Cubs. I'm sure Soto is on every Cubs fan's wish list, but if we're being a little bit more realistic, what is Crawley's wish list?
Right, so I've decided to put the GM hat on and take a look and see what's out there in free agency, what you know, names that are being bantied about in trade talks. The one thing we want to take a look at here, though, is just basic numbers, is that the Cubs are going to be $40 million under the luxury tax, all right? And so they were over the luxury tax last season. They went a little bit over. I doubt that they want to go over again. But $40 million, you know, you got a little bit of bread to play with here. We've also, over the last, ever since we started this podcast, we've had different people tell us about the talented prospects that have been coming through the system. A lot of them, you know, there's not a lot of spots for them to play in. And so trade is a possibility as well. And so what I did when I kind of looked at this thing here is I said, okay, well, what are the positions of needs for the Cubs? Like, I'm not looking at shortstops, right? Because that spot's pretty
that's,
much
that's something that if you were to say, if you were to say the last thing the Cubs need, it's a shortstop.
Right.
That's something they don't need. That they are set with.
Right. So we know as far as the roster is concerned, roughly what's happening, who, you know, who's staying, who's not. But I wanted to focus on what Jed Carter, the national local beat writers, have been talking about. The Cubs are looking for starting pitching, relief pitching, a catcher to pair with Miguel Amaya. Now, recently, Jeff Passan wrote an article for ESPN that said the Cubs are willing to listen to trade offers for both Nico Hoerner and Cody Bellinger. Now, Dustin, we've talked about Nico. He's been mentioned a lot of times as a trade candidate. And even though he's having that flexor tendon surgery, it doesn't seem like those rumors are slowing down any, right? You would think, oh, well, nobody wants him anymore. But I don't think that's the case.
Right. I mean, the problem, my biggest problem with that whole idea is the fact that his value is probably never lower. It's as low as it's ever been. I just don't understand why that's something you would want to do unless you, meaning the Cubs, think that he's not going to get any better.
Or it's an open spot that you could use as far, you know, if you want to move Michael Bush to second, there's some first basemen that I have that might be interesting, right? So you could take Michael Bush, move him to second. And then when I go through the list, we can talk about, you know, some of the guys that are on the market, but either for free agent or trade that could play first base that could potentially get you 30 to 40 home runs a year, right?
Yeah, so you're definitely not wrong, right? I mean, yeah.
Yeah, but so you could sit there and no, you're not. But honestly, like, let's be honest. Were you ever going to get a huge return for Nico Hoerner? It's not like you were going to get, like, you know, some team's top prospect in their system or something. I mean, you were never going to get that.
But I mean, I'd love to know, like, right now, what would you get? Like a prospect. Bullpen arm? I mean,
what you'd get, you'd shed some salary more than anything, right? And then you'd have an open spot. I think that's more than anything. I don't think you're looking to make this move to sit there and have all these assets. You're making a move. You clear a little bit of money. It's not a ton of money as contract, and you open up a spot that you can put someone else in. And so I think that's really more what you're looking at there.
Because he doesn't make a ton of dough.
I
mean, we would love to make what he makes, but I'm saying he doesn't make like, oh my gosh, this guy's an anchor weighing you down type money.
I mean, no, but again, if you're talking about trying to stay under the luxury tax, you know, that's something you're looking at too, right?
Yep.
So those are all kind of factors you want to keep in there. Now, Cody Bellinger, we know that, you know, the Cubs were kind of maybe wishing that he would opt out. But if someone's willing to trade for Cody, and it was Cody's decision to stay here. But if there's a team, maybe a team that really, you know, things happen and, you know, guy gets injured, guy gets popped for something, you know, maybe steroids, something like that. You never know what happens. If a team's willing to trade and take on that salary or even a good portion of that salary, maybe even half that salary, that would open up a spot for the outfield or DH. And so without further ado, let's kind of take a look here, right? So when I looked at the starting class, the starting pitching class of what's available, right? I want to say that right off the bat, when I was compiling this, I feel like the Cubs need a righty, right? They got Shota and Justin Steele are probably their two best pitchers, and they're lefties, right? Jameson Taillon's a righty. We're not worried about number five right now, but I think I'd like a righty. And so that's kind of when you hear my top three, that's why you might be like, well, what about Max Fried or Blake Snell or Sean Manaea?
Well, I was going to ask you about Max Fried. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think he's good. It's not that I wouldn't mind having him. I just want to, I would personally just like to mix it up. And I think that there's other pitchers out there that, that you could get. I tried to look at guys in their mid 20s to early 30s. So the Cubs have some prime years, trying to avoid guys with spotty injury histories. So, you know, I didn't want Nathan Eovaldi or Shane Bieber. You know, for me, Eovaldi's, I know he's one of those guys the Cubs have kind of been linked to, but you know, he's 34, 35. I'm just kind of, I want something a little bit better than that, right? And so I'm not Jed. I'm not dealing with Tom Ricketts' money constraints. I'm saying what I would like to see the Cubs do. So here we go. Ready? My three top starting pitchers that if I was sitting there looking at this, that I would want. And with number three, I'm going with number three and then working my way up to number one here. I'm going to go with Walker Buehler. And you're going to say, well, Crawley, you said you didn't want injured guys. He's coming back from Tommy John surgery.
But Crawley, you said you didn't want injured guys. I'm just
right. You know, that's such a common injury now, though, with Tommy John. Those guys come back. It takes them a little while to kind of get back in the groove. But a lot of times you see them even like increase their velocity and stuff like that. And so we saw what Walker Buehler did in the postseason for the Dodgers, right?
Yep. Yep. Very impressive.
And I'm looking at an article in The Athletic, and they're projecting 2 years, $32 million. I think that with Walker Buehler, that's going to be a really good contract, a really good deal. It's not going to be sitting on the books forever. So if Jed's, you know, shaky about big deals, it's not going to be a huge deal. I think, like I said, it might even be 1 year with an opt-out, but 2 years, $32 million for Walker Buehler. That's why he is number three on my list. I think that that's a pretty good deal, Dustin.
And I think that's probably somebody that's definitely going to be available, because I don't think, you know, that's somewhere where I think the Dodgers might move on, right, from him. So that's obtainable.
Right. Number two, Roki Sasaki, coming from Japan, 23-year-old right-hander. We have a great interview with my guy, Gaijin Baseball. Evan, it comes on and gives us a little bit of background on it. Pretty much every team is in on this guy. And Dustin, one of the reasons is because he is an international free agent. So he's not going to get a big contract. So it involves the international posting, and he's under 25. So that means international free agent. So he's not going to get a big contract, but he's going to want to play in a major market. And I think the Cubs have a really good history. You saw how Seiya Suzuki did. Shota Imanaga had a great season last year. And so I think the Cubs have become a destination for Japanese players. Now, obviously, you're going to have to compete with the West Coast teams, particularly the Dodgers and the Padres. But this is a righty who's got he throws heat. He throws 98. He's got a splitter. He's got a sweet slider. I think he's somebody that, you know, to get a guy like this, he may not be an ace right away, right? You saw that with Yamamoto this year.
Right,
he wasn't
right.
Like a guy that's going to kill it. But if you're talking about having a guy that's 23 and maybe able to have, you know, you're able to have him through age 23 to age 26, 27, I think that would be really good for the Cubs, you know?
I'm not arguing with anything you've said so far.
Right. And like I said, the fact he's going to be, I think every team right now is in on him, but I think a lot of the smaller market teams aren't really going to have a shot at him. So that takes me to my number one choice as far as starting pitching. I'm going to go with Corbin Burnes, Dustin. I saw him pitch for Milwaukee. I want the reunion with him and Craig Counsell. Right now, according to The Athletic, they are projecting 7 years, $217 million. But when you look at that guy's track record in Milwaukee, what he did.
Wait, one more time. 2 years what?
7 years, $217 million.
No. Too much. Too much. That's too long. It's too long. It's too much money.
You don't want an ace?
How long is he going to be an ace for?
Don't know. I couldn't tell you that, but there's a lot of teams that were able to ride guys for a long time, whether you're talking about Justin Verlander, whether you're talking about Max Scherzer. I don't know, Dustin. When you look at those things, you hope to get a good 3 to 4 years. So he's age 30 right now. If you get 3 to 4 really good years out of him, you don't think that would be worth it?
I guess. They need a superstar somewhere, Crowley. I guess if pitching's going to be the way they're going to do it, then you could do a lot worse. But, boy, that's a lot. That's why I wanted you to repeat it, because, boy, that's a lot of money.
that's the price to play poker. If you're talking about an ace starting pitcher, that's what they're going to command. That's why you hope to try to develop some of these guys through your own farm systems. So those are my three. Walker Buehler at number three, Roki Sasaki at number two, Corbin Burnes number one. I think Walker Buehler would make a bigger impact this year than Sasaki. I think Corbin Burnes obviously would be better than both of those. So I just like the youth in Sasaki. I think Walker Buehler is going to have a really good comeback. And there's, I think, you know, what I saw in the postseason shows to me that he's the big moment doesn't scare him at all. Now, for the closer, Dustin, one of the biggest reasons the Cubs didn't make it to the postseason 2024 was the bullpen, especially from April to June. The Cubs had 26 blown saves and a save opportunity percentage of 58%. So the league average for save opportunity percentage was 63%. So 63% of the time you convert the save, right? The Cubs were below that by 5 percentage points. Only the Red Sox, the Marlins, and the White Sox had a lower team save percentage. We know Albert Alzolay struggled before going on the IL. Hector Neris was a flop. Both of those guys each blew 5 saves. That's 10 games that they blew between the two of them. And think about that. If you would have cut that in half, what that might have been, right?
Yeah.
So I think we know, Dustin, that it's not just going to be one guy. But for me, you need that anchor. I don't care how you get the ball to the guy in the ninth. I think Jed has done a good enough job in the past. I think they're going to have to get more than one bullpen arm. I just think right now, I think that you need a guy that if you're, I don't want Hector Neris walking the tightrope, getting my stomach all nervous. I want a guy that comes in and locks it down.
Yeah. No, I mean, listen, yeah. The back of that bullpen needs something. There's no doubt about that.
So number three on my list, Carlos Estevez. They got him projected 3 years, $30 million. I know Jed doesn't like spending money on bullpens, but I think you got to, right?
This is where, you know, this is where I'm happy to spend their money.
Right. 32 years old. He was an all-star for the Angels in 2023, did better in 2024. The Phillies traded him for him. He had 26 saves, a 2.45 ERA, 8.2 strikeouts, and only two walks per nine innings, 97-mile per hour fastball with a slider and changeup. I think that, you know, that's a guy, again, 32, not too old, and you're talking about a 3 years deal, so you'd have him from 32 to 35. I think that that's a guy right now that the Cubs should really be looking at.
All right.
Number two on my list, the Cubs have been linked to this guy. He's probably going to get the most money in free agency, and that's going to be Tanner Scott, 30 years old, left-handed pitcher. The last team he played on was the Padres. You know, he was an all-star last season. He's got an upper 90s fastball, high 80s slider. He just looks really, really good. 2.04 ERA with 188 strikeouts and 150 innings over the past two seasons. And he's one of those split guys, Dustin, similar to what we talked about with Mark Leiter, right? He shuts down lefties and righties. Lefties hit 167 against him, righties 194. So I think that he is going to get the most money out of any reliever. But if you're telling me, hey, Jed, you got some money to spend, if you're not going for one of the big guys, if you're not going for the Corbin Burns of the world, well, then start building a bullpen that can actually close out games, right?
Yeah. Now, let me ask you, you can tell me your plan is to get to this later, but while we're talking about the back end of the bullpen, right, I'm curious, where are you on the idea? I saw this floated out there today on the internet about a guy like Mason Miller trading for a guy like that, and how much of the Cubs farm system talent that at this point seems blocked, or would you be willing to deal for somebody like that?
I mean, if you're not going to call these guys up, then you don't want to sit there and have them wasting away their prime years in minor league ball. So I'm Mason Miller's a name definitely that you could think about. But for number one on this list right here, on my list.
Great sound effect, Crowley.
I went with the former Brewer for starting pitcher. How about a former bull closer for the Brewers? How about Devin Williams, Dustin? What does Devin Williams do for you?
Yeah, I mean, you can talk me into that too. Yeah, I mean, there's not a bad name yet. Okay, there's not a bad name has been mentioned.
So when you talk, we have seen him. Did Craig Counsell very much familiar with him?
Very familiar, right?
Yeah,
very.
Milwaukee familiar. Declined a $10 million club option, but he remains under club contractual control. It's his final year of arbitration, and so they may be willing to trade. Now you're only going to get a year for him. Okay, you're only going to get a year, but I think that Milwaukee, they're always kind of trading and flipping these guys before they get to free agency. So I think that would be something interesting. I love his pitches. He's got the airbender, that changeup is sick. I know everybody remembers the last pitch, the big pitch he threw the ninth inning. He gave up that home run against Pete Alonso in the postseason to the Mets, but the Mets made a lot of really good pitchers look bad in that postseason. I'm not going to take that away. I think Devin Williams would be a great closer to have on this Cubs team.
Well, God, listen, again, Crowley, all these names are exciting to me. All these names.
And they are very much made available. Catcher. As far as a catcher, Miguel Amaya, good second half last season, but there's clearly a need for a second veteran catcher. Yan Gomes struggled. He was released. Thomas Nito was around for a bit before getting injured. And then Christian Bethencourt finished the season with the Cubs. One guy I had on my original list is already gone. Travis d'Arnaud from the Braves. The Angels signed him recently to a two-year, $12 million contract. So I got three picks for catcher for next year. My number three pick here, Dustin, is a guy that maybe some people know from, you know, if you watch some White Sox, but Christian Vasquez for the Twins. One thing about this offseason, Dustin, you know that the regional sports networks are tanking. So a lot of these teams are going to be losing money, the Twins among them. And so you're going to see a lot of teams trying to cut payroll. And so Vasquez is making $10 million, right? He's 34 years old, but he's a really good defender. He can handle a pitch and staff without much problem. I think he's a guy that, for me, if the Cubs could get him and, you know, see, you know, not have to give up much to get him, if the Cubs are willing to take on the $10 million salary, he's a guy that I think I'd like playing behind Miguel Amaya.
Is that the kind of money we're talking about, though, for a backup catcher is $10 million a year?
I don't know. Again, I think that in general, I think that, you know, some of these teams, Darnold is making a little bit less. But I just think that it all depends on what the Cubs spend, right? You got $40 million to spend. So if you could get him, I think he'd be an interesting guy to get. Okay. Number two on my list, boy, it feels like I'm going with a lot of guys that played for the Brewers. How about, let's go with Gary Sanchez. What does that do for you, Dustin?
Yeah, again, it's fine. Again, I, you know, it's okay.
Okay.
This is a position that you value a little bit more than I do right now.
I just think that, to me, it could be something that really helps out. I think Gary Sanchez is a guy who usually gets, right, double-digit home runs. He has a little bit more power, and we're trying to find power, right? And so what I worry about, Dustin, and you can say this about PCA, you could say it about Bush, you could say it about Miguel Amaya, is you may have that sophomore slump. You may have regression. So I'm kind of looking at this saying, like, I'm trying to hedge my bets, right? And so with Sanchez, he does have power. He's a good enough defender, I think, that you know, he's not going to hurt you. But I think that he would be a fun one to have on the team. And you know, you hope that with Gary Sanchez, a guy like that, you've seen him hit some monster home runs and do well, not consistently, but that's something that you might be able to pull out of there, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, number one here. I saw him with the Padres and he absolutely, if you remember when the Cubs played the Padres, he absolutely killed them. I like Kyle Higashioka. I think he's a guy that is.
God bless you.
Thank you. He's not a guy that's going to hit the home runs. I think he'll get to like 10, 15 home runs maybe, but I think he's just like a really good player on a team. He's a guy that kind of just, I like what he does. He just seems to, no moment seems too big for him. He just seems to have good contact skills. I think his defense is really good. I would like to have him on the team. I think he would be a good addition to this Cubs team. And again, you know, if Miguel Amaya is doing really, really well, you don't have to worry about it, right?
Yeah. Right, then you're right. Then you don't have to worry about it.
It's a luxury, but I just want to have another guy there. I don't want to be. I think Christian Bethencourt had a couple good weeks, and then if you take a look after those good weeks where he seemed to have a clutch hit every game, he really went down really quick. I don't want us to have to sit here, you know, trying to figure out. You know, you saw what happened with Yan Gomes and how bad that was. I would like to avoid
that went downhill really quick. That really did go downhill really quick.
And you had nothing behind it. You had nothing behind it, Dustin. So now you're sitting there and you're forced to play Miguel Amaya every single day. And that's not good for any catcher, right? You want to kind of limit the amount of time that they're having to spend behind the plate.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port and trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
You are listening to the Fly the W670 podcast. It is season 3. It is episode 91. Don't forget to leave us one of those 5-star reviews. This one we are calling Crawley's Cubs 2024 off-season wish list. Part of that wish list might be a baseball player from Japan. And in this segment, Crawley is interviewing Evan Christie, a Japanese baseball expert.
Joining me now on the Fly of the W podcast, I am glad to have back our friend Evan Christie from Gaijin Baseball. He knows all things Japanese baseball. Evan, how you doing, buddy?
Good. Glad to be back on the show. It's been a while.
Yeah, you know, and so one of the fun things, I think of this last season is just – there was just so much fun with the Japanese players. You saw what happened, obviously, Shohei Ohtani and Yamamoto get to win the World Series. Shota Imanaga has just a phenomenal season for the Cubs, I think way better than a lot of people predicted. And now you have this amazing matchup for opening day 2025 in Tokyo. First off, are you going? I have to ask.
No, I probably won't be in town at that time, and the tickets are already gone, and they're very, Japan is very anti-resale, sadly. They ended up actually shutting down one of the services that actually helped people buy NPB tickets through a proxy, which, more teams are making English stuff out there. But like the resale market in Japan is pretty much non-existent. It's not like we have a SeatGeek over here or something like that. So, I mean, if I could, if someone wants to hire me to write about those games, DMs and emails are open, but I'm not holding my breath.
It's going to be fun. Let's talk about Shota, because the last time I had you on, the Cubs signed Shota Imanaga. It's really exciting. I was actually at the press conference at CubsCon when he was introduced. And I got to tell you, there was something about him from that moment. It was the first time I'd ever been inside, when they did one of these introductory press conferences and they put the jersey and the hat. And he opens up with that, "Hey, Chicago, what do you say?" And the place just goes nuts. And I didn't know his personality prior, obviously coming to Chicago. But I mean, the Cub fans just ate him up. I mean, he from picking a number that Ben Zobrist wore to coming out to the Blackhawks theme song. I mean, he just embraced Chicago, and it was such a fun season to see him do. How surprised were you to see how big he kind of blew up in Chicago and what a successful season he had his first year?
I wasn't surprised per se, because he was always a popular pitcher. I was more surprised he started to let his personality show out a little more, because if you remember when he threw, if you have seen the clip, I believe a Pitching Ninja showed it, when he threw his no-hitter in Japan, he was very serious business kind of thing, despite it being like a historic no-hitter in its own right. With it being an interleague no-hitter and the first no-hitter at the Sapporo Dome in the last year that the Sapporo Dome was being used for NPB games. Like he kind of, you see him kind of loosen up a little bit because he didn't have to be the ace of the staff anymore. Like in Yokohama, he was the ace. Everything was on him. He had to lead. He had to be, he was a captain. He was an ace. He was all that stuff. When he was in Chicago, he kind of eased up, let his personality show out a little more, and was very much encouraged to by the fan base. And I think, I don't think he even expected to be as good as he was, because he was right on par with pretty much how he did in NPB last year in terms of numbers. And that's coming from, you know, a hitter's park in Yokohama, like, sorry, I'm getting my years mixed up, but like in 2022, you know what I'm sorry, 2023 in NPB, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like he's going from a hitter's park to a hitter's park, and you don't really like expect, like no one expected things. Like the Yankees personally, like they said, like, oh, he's a fly ball pitcher, we don't want him because of that. I was honestly expecting a little bit of an evening out once the cold weather was over and once we were out of spring, but nah, he kept it up and he was great, honestly.
Now that's something we're going to be watching about the second year, because I don't know if you heard this, but Wrigley Field played as one of the most pitcher friendly parks. It was 29th in park factor. So it's going to be, you know, the hitters, the Cubs hitters were just awful last year, no power at home. And so it's going to, you know, obviously that must have an effect on the pitching too. But even when he was on the road, he pitched really well too. So can you tell everybody, in your opinion, how the Nippon Professional Baseball League, how that compares to the major leagues?
People say quadruple A, which I think is generally a thing, but like I think it's a lot better, because quadruple A kind of really downplays a bit of how good NPB is as a whole. I mean, people have been talking like oh, an MLB team would always beat an NPB team. That's not always the case. I mean, I was doing a thing where I went back and I looked at like the Dodgers tour, where the Dodgers in 1966 played a 7-game set against the Yomiuri Giants and lost 4-3. And the San Francisco Giants lost to the Lotte Orions in 1970, 3-2 in a preseason thing. And because there's this whole thing right now about the culture shift in Japanese baseball, as the owners are finally coming around to, oh, crap, we actually have to, like, we can't just sit on our laurels anymore. And just because there was a thing with the ownership, was they accepted that they were a bit below MLB and wouldn't have to, like, oh, a Japanese player would never be able to compete in MLB. So we won't have to, you know, like, we won't have to worry about them leaving in that way. And then you have Ichiro and Hideki Matsui and everything over the last 20 years that has kind of really changed that narrative. And then with Roki Sasaki jumping over far earlier than anyone anticipated, it really is starting to get into these owners' minds that, okay, we are on that level. More of our players are on that level. We need to start, you know, getting our butts in gear. And some of, like, it's not so much the new money owners, people like Rakuten and SoftBank, who own teams. It's the older money owners, the people who've been owning the team since the beginning, back in 1936. You know, we have some of those legacy owners that are still very, you know, iffy about spending money, sometimes because they don't want to, sometimes, like in the case of Chinichi, they can't really. So, like, we're starting, like, once we've hit that paradigm shift, it doesn't stop. And NPB is in, like, especially with guys like Shota Imanaga coming over and having a lot of success in MLB, this is starting to become a time of like NPB going, okay, we need to get our product out there. We need to do more, you know, to get our faces out there and to not fade into the background as like this stepping stone league, which is what a lot of people kind of see it as now.
So, you know, you mentioned the Roki Sasaki. What can you tell? Where did this kid come from? Where did he kind of really start to turn some heads with people?
So he's been turning heads since high school. He could throw 100 miles an hour in high school, but he didn't go to like one of he comes from Iwate Prefecture. He sadly lost his father and grandparents in the 2011 earthquake and tsunami, which may have played into this decision to go early. And his general impulsiveness, because, you know, he's seen that, you know, it can all go away in an instant, I'm going to, you know, seize on the moment as fast as I can. The first time he really made national headlines was, again, the 162 kilometers an hour pitch in high school, which is, I have a converter up now, 100.6. And there was also a thing in his final year of high school. His school had made the Iwate Prefecture Finals. A win would mean their first trip to Koshen. This is a school that had never produced an NPB year. They had like one or two guys who played in the minor leagues in Japan, but never made it up to NPB. So they need, like, this was a big moment for the school, and his coach sat him. His coach sat him for reasons of, I'm going to protect your arm. I'm not going to be one of these traditional high school coaches who runs you into the ground. If we win, I'll use you at Koshen. If we lose, we lose. And he also made a lot of headlines in the draft because you had a lot of the tradition. We knew that he was going to get posted at some point or another because a lot of the traditional anti-posting teams, those being the Chunichi Dragons, the Yomiuri Giants, and the SoftBank Hawks, they looked at him, they praised him, they had interviews with him, and they didn't draft him. Because in how the NPB draft works is that you, like, everyone's fair game in the first round opening there. It's to prevent tanking. So, and everyone has an equal shot. Like, the only thing a worse team gets is they get to pick the envelope first. So kind of like, say a big name prospect comes up. He's selected by three teams, the team that finished last in the Pacific League, a team that finished third in the Central League, and a team that finished first in the Pacific League. So the last in the Pacific League team would pick first, third in the Central League team would pick the envelope second, and then the best team in the PL would pick final, and they'd all open the envelopes at the same time, and boom, that's who gets him. So when it came to those teams praising him and then not drafting him, we kind of knew this day was coming. Going to the Marines at the start, there was a lot of, trepidation because at the time their manager was Tadahito Iguchi, who played on the south side.
Yeah.
Great player, all right manager. The team that around him was good. And in 2021, he made his first playoff appearances and all that. And then in 2022, suddenly it very much wasn't. The offense completely fell off a cliff. Brandon Laird went from being an all right player to just being the worst. Having the worst season by a foreign player in Marines history, and all this stuff, but he was kept on because, you know, they were out of it. He was popular. Give him the send off he kind of deserves because he'd played in Japan for I think it was like his eighth year in Japan. So he's the kind of guy who gets a send off and just kind of regroup for the next year. And two straight third place finishes under Masato Yoshi, who was a lot of people thought was a higher. Specifically for Sasaki, because Sasaki was already having durability issues. And then you have Masato Yoshi, who not only pitched in MLB and would help with Sasaki's ambitions and what he can expect, but also he has a master's degree in physical education. He knows how to train people. He knows how to develop people. He knows all the science behind it. And the thought process was, oh, we can get him up to at least a qualified season and then post him when he's 25 for maximum value. That didn't end up happening, as no, obviously with this year.
Yeah. Exactly. And at 19 years old, right, in 2021, a 184 ERA over 16 starts. And then 2023, I think, is going to be a year when we look back at the World Baseball Classic, not just Japan, but everybody. I think it really changed everything there.
I will say 2021, it was a 2.27 ERA over 11 starts because you're including his minor league stats there.
Ah, sorry about that.
Yeah, okay. It's not your fault. It's Baseball Reference. They don't like, and they've said, oh, we have no plans to do that. And everyone in the NPB community is like, why? You're making our job so hard for us. I have to pay for Delta Graphs, which is a great site. And it's actually it's not an unreasonable amount. It's like 1,000 yen per month with the week yen. I think it's like $6.30 a month. And you get all the advanced stats.
Nice.
Nice. And then he went down to a 1.78. Yeah, like he steadily got better. And then this year, something happened. It was like he toned it back a bit to try and go longer. Mm-hmm. I mean, because in 2023, he had a FIP under one.
Right.
You know, and a FIP minus of 38, of 26, an X FIP minus of 38, like ridiculous numbers. And now it's still great. Like his FIP minus last year, or say this year, was 61. So still 39% better than your average pitcher. It's just he had very clearly scaled it back. And there was a lot of talk about, is this a durability play to try and go for a full qualified season? But his ERA jumped to a career worst 2.35. His RA minus wasn't his career worst, but it was still up to 82. Like, it's still good, but it's a lot more pedestrian and not the level of ridiculous dominance that we had gotten used to over 2022 and 2023.
Right. Mm-hmm. And when I was talking about that World Baseball Classic, I mean, a rotation with Ohtani, Yamamoto, Sasaki. I mean, you know, Shohei was on that team. Unfortunately, Seiya Suzuki was not. He hurt himself. No. And boy, we were hoping he would really be kind of pitching Shohei Ohtani and get him over here. But now that you talked about leaving early, posting early. Can you explain to our listeners what that means and how kind of controversial that is that he is posting now at his age?
Yeah. So the posting system was developed in 1998 to try and get over the old system, which was these players would retire from NPB and then go sign an MLB. The team would get nothing. And, you know, aside from their rights when they came back to NPB, which could happen, could not. Who knows? And so rules surrounding the real thing that really kicked it off was Hideki Irabu, because what had happened was his team, also the Marines, they did a backdoor deal with the Padres to kind of go, hey, if Irabu retires, you have his MLB rights, which Irabu did not want. He wanted to sign with the Yankees. And that led to this whole mess of like, okay, we need some kind of set system because otherwise this is just going to keep happening. And these teams need compensation for losing the players they developed and that are under contract with them. And so the posting system has changed a lot. It used to be a silent auction. And then Daisuke Matsuzaka came along. The previous monster, Roki Sasaki is the monster of the Reiwa era. Matsuzaka was the monster of the Heisei era, which is the reign of Akihito, for those of you who don't know. And he commanded a posting fee of over $50 million, which was absolutely ludicrous. The Lions were happy to see it go that high because it helped them repair the leaky roof on their stadium. and the MLB just kind of went, oh, this this is not good. And Japanese players also didn't like it because it was a silent auction system. And so they go through all this trouble of like lobbying their team to get posted. They get like get posted finally. And then a team that they don't want to sign for wins the rights to negotiate with them. And then it's like, well, I've just wasted all this time because I'm not signing with you.
Right.
Kind of thing. And so then you have the system that came about after that where the posting fee would be negotiated separately. The player could sign with whoever they wanted, but the posting fee could be negotiated separately. That's the posting system Shohei Ohtani came over with. He came over in the last year of that old system because there was this, like they knew the system was going to change and this was the last year they could post him early. Shohei Ohtani did have an early posting clause in his contract specifically because that was the posting system at the time. But the posting fee was capped at $20 million. NPB teams didn't particularly like that because, you know, they want as much money as they can get. And sometimes what would happen was the MLB team that the player wanted to go to would try and lowball the NPB team. The NPB team would say, no, pay us what we want you to pay us for this player. And then the thing would go nowhere and the player would come back to his old team in a huff. So what had to happen was the 2018 rule change, which meant that posting fees are now like a sales tax on the guaranteed money of the contract. So, for example, when it came to Yoshinobu Yamamoto in his $325 million contract, it was what, $56 million or something like that, because in stages of like sales tax. So the thought process was, since that had come in after 2018, no NPB team in their right mind would ever post a player before he was 25, because around the same time that that changed, MLB also changed their rules regarding international free agents, increasing the age from 23 to 25, which is something NPB agreed to because they thought, hey, we get to keep our players longer and we get more money out of this. This is a win-win for us. And what ended up happening with this was part of the reason why I came out so hard against the idea that he could have ever been posted is I didn't have anyone in the Marines office yet. Actually, the whole fiasco led to me getting someone in the Marines front office as a source, but my sources in other NPB front offices were going, yeah, they'd have to be stupid. There's no way that they do this. They'd be forfeiting tens of millions of dollars. That's ridiculous. And, you know, people go like, oh, Lotte's a multi-billion dollar company. Lotte's lost nearly $1 billion since the pandemic started in terms of net worth. So they'll take any money they can get. And this whole thing kind of created this reckoning for that posting system, much like Shohei created a reckoning for the posting system that ended after he got posted. I feel like Roki could create a reckoning for this level of posting system.
Right. And so one of the surprising thing is just the age. Like you said, usually, okay, we're going to keep him later. He's only going to be 23. So he's 3 years younger than Yamamoto. And so that becomes interesting. But like you said, this becomes complicated because we're throwing in international free agent money and all of those things. So he's kind of subject to the international bonus pool rules. And so the teams, it's not going to be a huge contract that they're going to be having to pay him.
Yeah. And there's a lot of talk about, oh, they'll sign him to a rookie contract and then they'll extend him for however many things. And Lotte is not happy about that because that means that they're going to lose out on that money because like the extensions don't count towards the posting fee.
Right.
And they can't do anything to go, hey, you know, if you give a guy an extension, give us money too, because that was made illegal after the whole business with Irabu and the Padres. Any kind of backroom deal is done. So that really means that this is truly a free for all. This is who makes the best pitch when it comes to Roki Sasaki and where he's going to sign. A lot of people are saying Dodgers. A lot of people are also saying Padres. People are talking about, oh, he signed with Yamamoto's agent. Well, guess what? That's also Darvish's agent. And, you know, Yamamoto is his friend and rival. Darvish is his mentor. And you level into that whole different thing of mind games and messing. And quite frankly, it really speaks to, like, everyone's throwing out names of teams. Everyone's, like... kind of figuring out, like, Dodgers fans have already decided that he's theirs, which makes me go, no, just because, like, there are several other teams that could make a pitch. And when it comes to, they're talking about, like, advertising deal money. Well, advertising deal money is going to be actually probably less with the Dodgers because they already have Yamamoto and Otani to appeal to the Japanese market. They don't really need another guy, like, and Roki's definitely going to be the third guy amongst those when it comes to that.
And so for Cub fans, right, we take a look at this and we say, okay, well, you know, Chicago has had a pretty good history with Japanese players. Kosuke Fukudome was the first one that I always kind of remember. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Yu Darvish, and he's done nothing but praise his time in Chicago. Seiya comes over, and then Shota blows up. And so there is a pretty, you know, if you're saying that Yu Darvish is his mentor, not saying that he's going to sign with the Cubs, but if the Cubs make a really good pitch, and let's say Roki decides to talk to Yu Darvish prior, I mean, you know, I'm sure he'd have some good things to say about the Cubs.
Darvish was in Japan at the exact same time Roki got posted. But he was up in Hokkaido with his old club, the Fighters, just kind of like messing around doing stuff in fall camp and, you know, buying stuff, like buying old merch for his daughter of the scariest mascot in baseball history. If you ever want nightmare fuel, look up Fighty, who was their mascot in the 90s. It's one of the scariest, like, scariest mascots you'll ever see. Like, especially because there's one famous photo of which it's like, it just looks like a demon.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I think that, like I said, I think the Cubs have, you know, at least a shot here. I remember when Otani was first came over, they were looking at this, and then he was saying, okay, I think Chicago was the only non-West Coast team that he met with.
Yeah.
Right? And so, I mean, clearly there's some interest from Japanese ball players. The Cubs are playing the Dodgers in Japan for that first series. And like you said, you know, you already got four great Japanese players that are going to be in the Tokyo Dome for that. Now let's see if we can add one more. I think Dodgers fans want him. Obviously, every team wants him.
Yeah.
What is it about his pitch mix that makes him so interesting?
Like, he is actually fairly MLB style in his pitch mix, in that he doesn't really have much of a pitch mix. The thing with a lot of MPB pitchers is, because you're facing the same teams over and over and over again, you're facing most of your games are against five set opponents, because there's interleague is a set part of the season that only happens once a year. And you only, like, you may play half of the other teams in the other league outside of the Japan series. So you have to keep an arsenal. You have to keep part of the reason why Darvish, his arsenal is so massive, is it was an arsenal built by NPB, where he had to throw the kitchen sink at some teams to get past them. It's part of what won him two MVPs. And what Roki has is a mix. He's got a fastball, he's got a slider, he's got a sweeper, and he's got a sinker. The sinker is his money pitch, but he has started to actually stop using it. He also had a curveball. He completely stopped using that entirely. Changeup he had in his first year, completely stopped using that entirely. His fastball usage has actually steadily gone down, because while his fastball is that ridiculous, like, I think he in 2023 he averaged 159.1 kilometers an hour, which is 99 miles an hour on a fastball. That was his average fastball in 2023. He's very much toned it down because it's not actually that good of a fastball. It stays very straight. It does not fool your eye outside of being a white blur, and people picked up on that. So he's started to work his slider a lot more. His slider percentage went from about 14% to 25%. He's actually toned down on his splitter, which was his trademark strikeout pitch until people started expecting it. You know, you're down two strikes on Sasaki, lay off, he's going to bury a splitter in the dirt. And as he has increased his mix more and refined his pitches, he has gotten a little bit better, but he's also taken a step back, which is what's concerning for a lot of people, is he lost an average of 3 kilometers an hour off his fastball, which is about 1 and a bit miles an hour. He's lost, he's not throwing his slider anywhere near as hard. It went down from about 141 kilometers an hour to 134, which is a massive 7 kilometer an hour drop, is about 3 miles an hour. And he's lost 2 kilometers an hour off of his splitter, which some people saying he's saving his bullets. Some people are worried about a potential arm injury, because that did sideline him for a little bit this year, which is why you have some people in the Japanese media basically saying any team who signs him, it's going to be a big mistake, because quite frankly, he does not have the durability. If you think he's going to be a starter, you're wrong. He probably profiles as a closer. This is something that has been said in the American media as well, that they think he'll eventually become a closer after they kind of give up on starting him, which is a concern. It's one where he's still very young. There's still a lot of development you can do. There was what I will say is the one really funny thing was when former Hall of Fame shortstop and manager Tatsuro Hirooka, he kind of went off basically saying like, oh, he's, you know, an MLB team's going to chew him up and spit him out. They don't know how to develop these pitchers, because he's seen that over and over and over again with pitchers coming over to MLB and not having their issues fixed. And I kind of said he raises some valid points, and I had one Dodgers fan go like, oh, what does he know about, you know, developing people? And I'm like, here is the dynasty the man built. He built a team that won 11 pennants in 13 years. Like, this is a man who knows a thing or two. So I tend to bring that up because there's a lot of people who are thinking he'll step up and be an ace in year one. He will not. You could argue he wasn't even the ace of the Marines. The fans felt that Kazuya Ojima was the ace because he won the most games, because, you know, you got to remember there is still that old school style of thinking over there, like assigning a lot of wins to it. But frankly, Atsuki Taniichi, who was the number two guy on the Marines after Roki, he is very close to him in many ways. So there was this kind of like, there's this kind of view of the people who expect him to step in and be an ace, they're wrong, because he's never had to be that. And I don't think he would stand up to that pressure well, because it's very clear that, like, we saw when he had his worst start ever this year, how quickly things could unravel when things aren't going his way. Because the Fighters, in one start, I think it was back in June, absolutely read him like a book and put up 5 runs on him. And he was completely and utterly, like, he was angry. He was angry and losing it in the dugout. And that's something you don't see.
So, you know, I guess as we're taking a look here, again, 23 years old, throws with velocity, but it's been a little bit down recently. But do you still see, you know, with all these teams, it seems like right now, I don't know if it's just a media feeding frenzy or what, but where do you kind of, do you think he stays West Coast, or you think he's open to any team right now?
I think he's open to any of the major big market teams. I think any big market team could make a push, because a lot of the big, including the white, it's like including the Cubs. I think the only team in a big market that really couldn't have any hope in hell of signing him is the White Sox, because, you know, just being so bad. The Yankees have said they're in on him. The Mets have said they're in on him. The Blue Jays have said they're in on him. You know, the Padres and Dodgers, the hard Chargers that everyone thinks will get him. There's been some whispers around the Mariners, although I would not put much into that, because Jerry DePoto is not the kind of guy who would potentially even risk using all of his IFA bonus pool money to do that. I think that I'm leaning Dodgers and Padres when it comes to where he'll end up. The Cubs do have a very good shot, given how positive a reputation the organization has in Japan, and among its Japanese alumni, you know, with Fukudome, with Darvish, with Suzuki and Imanaga. But I think that, like, I think that he goes, honestly, like, the Cubs are like where I'd say I'd rank them 5th on my thing. I have Dodgers and Padres at co-1, because, you know, everyone is saying Dodgers and Padres, even in the Japanese media, the people who are close to Yankees, like to Roki's camp, are saying Dodgers, Padres. It's one of the two. I'd put the Yankees at 3, because Cashman has been in on him for a long time. I put the Mets at 4 simply because the Mets have Senga and the money. Well, the money isn't really what's worth it right now.
True, yeah.
Like, you can't really just chuck money at this kind of problem. It's not like the whole Juan Soto sweepstakes where it's, you know, money, 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 money. It's right. Who has the most money. It's who makes the best pitch. And the Mets talking about, like, how that kind of argument, like, they'd have a solid argument. The Cubs would have a solid argument. I think personally, if I were Roki in Roki's camp, I would be encouraging him to go slightly smaller market, at least for the first little bit, and then possibly demanding a trade out of there if you have the leverage. But because I don't think he really has ever had to deal with that kind of big market pressure. He did not play for a big market team in Japan. He played for the Chiba Marines, who have arguably the most passionate fan base in Japan. It's just the fact that it's not Tokyo. You're not playing in Tokyo. You're not playing in Osaka. You're not playing even in Fukuoka. You're playing in essentially a suburb of Tokyo that is very proud and very loud, but not like a destination team, basically.
Not a pressure cooker.
Not a pressure cooker. Not like if he were playing, if he had been drafted by Yomiuri, he probably wouldn't have signed with Yomiuri because of their anti-posting stance if they had gone with him. But like the pressure on Yomiuri Giants pitchers is insane, which is why I think Sugano will actually probably go smaller market, because he's already been in arguably the largest market in baseball outside of New York City. And he may want to tone that down a bit, or he may thrive in it. Who knows? I think Sugano is a more interesting pick. I think the Cubs should go after him, even if it's only on like a short-term 1-year deal, because he'll take short-term. He knows he's old. He's just doing this for that MLB thing. But I think Sugano has a skill set that does transfer well to MLB in terms of pitching. And for other guys, I think when it comes to the other guys who are looking at trying to go over to North America, I would avoid RN Curry as much as I love him. But the only thing advantage he has is that he speaks English, because his dad is American. But he's got a good pitch mix, but he's a bit of a dead ball merchant. He's only really rose into prominence in the current, dead ball era that we've had since 2021. Which is another concern with Sasaki, but then again, that was a concern with Imanaga, and that proved to be unfounded. And with Koyo Aoyagi, he's got a weird arm slot. He's a submariner, but I can't see him being more than a reliever, low leverage, because his ace, he's not an ace anymore. He was an ace two-ish years ago, but not really anymore. So. Yeah,
well,
so
I would say, Evan, you know, you've given me some food for thought here. Now I'm going to kind of rethink things, and you gave me something to kind of ponder. And Cub fans, you got us at number 5 in Chicago. So, you know, hey, number five out of 30 still means we got a pretty good shot here.
You're in the top 6th.
Hey, Evan, why don't you do me a favor and tell our listeners where they can follow you on the socials to find out more about Japanese baseball and Japanese ball players?
Yeah, I'm on YouTube, Twitter, Blue Sky. I don't really post on Instagram. I might do that just because I've found so many cool photos during my current research dive tribe down, like the stuff I've been diving down. But I'm on all of the major stuff under Gaijin Baseball, if outside of Twitch, basically. You know, you like search Gaijin Baseball. If you find that account, I'm that guy. So, yeah.
Well, Evan, we appreciate you coming on and giving us some background. And hopefully, like I said, hey, if all of a sudden the Cubs sign him, we'll get you right back on. All right, buddy?
Thanks, man.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This holiday, BMW has reunited 3 members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free.
all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Fly the W670 podcast, season 3, episode 91, Crawley's Cubs 2025 off-season wish list. Don't forget to listen, download, review, subscribe to the Fly the W podcast, leave us a 5-star review, and don't forget, you can watch us on the 670 The Score YouTube page. All right, Crawley, a quick trip around the bases, please.
Yes, sir. No show to love. On Monday night, the Baseball Writers Association announced the finalists for MVP, Cy Young, and Rookie of the Year. Dustin, I think we didn't have any kind of illusions that the Cubs would have anybody that would fit in that category. There were no MVPs that would, you know, be on this team, and you can't argue with Francisco Lindor, Ketel Marte, and Shohei Ohtani. And we already, spoiler alert, Ohtani's your NL MVP for the 2024 season. So no Cubs on there.
Spoiler alert.
Okay. Spoiler alert. But we did get Cy Young. And with Cy Young, Chris Sale from the Braves, Paul Skeen from the Pirates, and Zach Wheeler from the Phillies. No Shota Imanaga for the Cy Young Award voting. So, that's a really good list of really good players.
I think it would have been in another city if Shota – I mean, if Shota was on that list in another city and one of those guys were left off, they'd have a lot of material for Sports Talk Radio.
Now, the other thing we were wondering, and I think, Dustin, you and I both are on the same boat that Shota's not a rookie.
He's not a rookie.
But when we got Rookie of the Year, I mean, he did qualify. Jackson Chourio from the Brewers, Jackson Merrill of the Padres, and Paul Skeens from the Pirates. All Rookie of the Years. That is a sick class. Those guys are going to all be really good for a really long time. But Dustin, you know, when you take a look at Shota Imanaga, he had a 15-3 record with a 2.91 ERA and 29 starts. He had a 1.021 WHIP, walks, hits, innings pitch across 173 and a third innings. How about this?
This is the stat, Crawley. That's so important.
The Cubs were 23-6 in games started by Imanaga compared to 60-73.
That's just so wild. It's crazy. That stat is crazy. Cray cray. I think that's what the kids say. Cray cray.
And not only that, Dustin, he took part in the combined no-hitter that hasn't, you know, that we hadn't seen at Wrigley Field since it was Milt Pappas. The last time there was a no-hitter at Wrigley Field, he was part of that. And so when I look at that, I I'm not going to sit there and argue and be like, oh, Shota was robbed, but he really had a great season. And unfortunately, there was just a lot of really great competition. And when I sat there and I looked at it every which way, to me, Paul Skeens is one of the most dominant pitchers I've seen in a long time. Just phenomenal. When you take a look at Chris Sale, we've known what Chris Sale is. When we saw him on the south side, he had some injury trouble. To come back like he did this year was phenomenal. And Zach Wheeler had a really great year too. So there's no anything. And again, with the rookies, Chourio and Merrill, and again, Skeens all had phenomenal years. I'm not going to argue about this or complain that he was hosed around.
All right. Silver Slugger. No love for our guy, Seiya Suzuki, huh?
Yeah. I'm a little bit not happy about that. Now, this one I am going to complain about. Seiya Suzuki was up for the Silver Slugger. And Dustin, I don't know what it is about Seiya Suzuki. it just, he doesn't get any, I think he gets overlooked a lot. I think umpires, he gets some of the worst strike calls against him for no reason. So just so people know, with the Silver Slugger, there's five NL outfield finalists, right, that are up for the award. So three out of the five are going to get it. You got pretty good odds that you might get it. But he does not get it. Teoscar Hernandez, Jackson Merrill, and Jurickson Profar won the Silver Slugger. Suzuki slash 283, 366, 482. His slug, third best among outfielders. His on-base plus slugging, 848, best among outfielders. 20 home runs, 73 RBIs. You know, you can't tell me Jurickson Profar is a better hitter than say, Suzuki. I just can't buy that. I don't know. Who would you rather have if you could have the choice between Profar? I mean, Merrill, obviously Merrill had a great year. Teoscar Hernandez. But Teoscar also plays with the Dodgers where that lineup's ridiculous. You know what I mean? In front of them. Yeah. I mean, what would happen if Seiya played in that lineup? Would he see more pitches? Would he have more guys in base in front of him? And we talked about the park factors at Wrigley Field this year. I think that Seiya has improved every single year that he's been here. I just felt that he was deserving of the Silver Slugger. Now, Dustin, we talked a little bit about, prospects and who the prospects are going to be that are going to kind of come up. One guy that did get some love, Jonathan Long. And he's, you know, with everything going on with Moises Ballesteros, Jonathan Long has had a really great fall season in the AFL. He was named the AFL Player of the Week. He went 6-for-15 with two home runs. He plays third base. So as far as Jonathan Long is concerned, Dustin, this is a guy that you say to yourself, hey, maybe in the future he could be someone that climbs up some prospect rankings, in my opinion.
Sure. We'll see how it goes for him.
You know, he's a young guy. He's doing really well. And so it sometimes you get these guys like Jefferson Rojas, guys that you don't expect to really kind of fly up. Christopher Morel was another guy that kind of exploded out of there. He's only 22 years old. He's a third baseman. So he played for two teams in 2023, played rookie ball, and he played at Myrtle Beach. And then in 2024, he started out in South Bend and finished with Tennessee. So, and in Tennessee in Double A, he slashed 340, 455, 529 you're talking 46 games. So this is a guy that's really been playing some really, really good baseball. And he's a guy that may really shoot up some prospect lists for the Cubs next year. I'm interested to see where he's going to start, how long, if he's in Tennessee, maybe he's there for a month, and then he's a AAA, third baseman. He may be a guy that forces a move, right?
He may indeed. Well, Crowley, that's a wrap. Don't forget, listen, download, review, subscribe to the Fly the W podcast. Follow on all the socials, Facebook, Instagram. Email us, flythew670@gmail.com. You play GM. Tell Crowley and I what you think of his list and create your own list. And you can watch us by subscribing to the 670 The Score YouTube channel. All right, Crowley, next week is the big award week in MLB. So we'll get everybody caught up when those awards start getting handed out.
Absolutely. And by this time next year, Dustin, I want to see some Northsiders winning awards. Go Cubs!
It's all over.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at newbalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.